The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and recriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the
herb. Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host... Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, May 11th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here with the full complement of Normal Show Live crew. We are ready to go on this hemp day, hump day. Let's start by saying hi to the pimp, Ganja John.
Don't say that.
Rocking the purple, the green, and the yellow. You look like Barney the dinosaur threw up, man.
I know. I love it.
It's a beautiful thing. I love it. Only Ganja John can get away with that color palette. It's a beautiful thing.
And I honestly wasn't thinking about it.
I love it. Also joining us from our virtual studio in the restored Grastoria, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hi. So good to be back.
It's so good to have you back. What happened? Did they ever find out what caused the problem up there?
Let's see. Well, there was a wire cut on Monday that pretty much put all of Astoria without power on Monday. And then, I don't know, Quest came out today and changed the flux capacitor or something.
Yeah, I see.
Seems to be okay now.
1.21 gigawatts.
So there's no truth to the rumor that it was Goonies that caused the problem.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's an unknown, like many things here in Astoria. It's a mystery.
A beautiful mystery wrapped in an enigma. All right. Cannabis Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after our first break. So what do we got in the news today?
Oh, my gosh. We have so much news today. You're probably going to have to cut me off. But I want to tell you about a lawsuit that's happening in Montana that really perked my interest. Also, Paul Armentano has sent us a few alerts that I need to tell you about, one in California and one from Connecticut. That Oklahoma controversial hash bill has been making some more waves. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. And if I have time, I want to tell you about the marches that they had in Mexico over the weekend.
All right. We're going all around the world this week. We talked to South Africa yesterday, and Mexico we'll talk about today. Sounds good, Carrie. Also coming up on today's show, it is Ivory Wednesday, and I'm going to bring you more music from Austin, Texas. One of the bands that played at the Texas Normal fundraiser at Momo's on 6th Street was called Sun Salutation, and I love this band. We'll tell you more about them when we get to 20 after. At half past, we've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who always joins us on Wednesdays to answer your live questions on cannabis science, history, and culture. We'll have our live phone call-ins at 971-533-7111, or you can ask your questions through our chat line. And then at the end of the show, time for a little radical ranting. I got to go off on the Denver Post. They've resurrected the ghost of William Randolph Hearst. They're spreading some reefer madness, and you know what I got to do about that. It's time to clean it up and debunk it. Be back right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Two medical marijuana providers from Montana that were raided earlier this year are suing the government for unconstitutional raids of their businesses. The owners of the Montana Caregivers Association and MCM Caregivers are saying that the March 14th raids exceeded the federal government's authorities, that it preempted Montana's medical marijuana law, and that it violated medical marijuana providers' civil rights. Their lawsuit names the federal government, the Department of Justice, Attorney General Eric Holder, and U.S. Attorney for Montana, Michael Cotter. It was filed yesterday in the U.S. District Court in Missoula. The plaintiffs are claiming that the obvious aim of the feds is to shut down the medical marijuana industry. Christopher Williams of the Montana Caregivers Association and Randy Liebenguth of MCM Caregivers say in their suit, quote, "The federal government has made it clear its intent to threaten and eventually eliminate any business or enterprise related to the medical use of marijuana." Federal agents executed 26 search warrants against medical marijuana businesses in Montana on those March 14th raids, seizing medical cannabis, cash, weapons, and vehicles in what Cotter says was part of a drug trafficking investigation. Now, no charges have ever been filed concerning the raids, and the U.S. Attorney Cotter's office has since refused to comment on that investigation. And since then, Montana's lawmakers have passed a bill that would effectively ban marijuana businesses by making it illegal for businesses to charge for marijuana and also limiting the number of patients per provider. Medical marijuana advocates have organized protests and are planning a petition drive in which they hope to gather enough signatures to block the bill from becoming a law. Williams and Liebenguth claim that because the U.S. Constitution does not expressly grant the government powers over medical marijuana, the government violated the 10th Amendment to overrule Montana's medical marijuana laws. The 10th Amendment says powers not delegated to the U.S. or prohibited by the Constitution are reserved to the states. Current Montana law says a marijuana provider can't be arrested, prosecuted, or penalized if they do not exceed the amount of medical cannabis they're allowed to keep per patient. The men are asking Judge Donald Malloy to declare the raids unconstitutional and prevent the government from threatening, interfering, or prosecuting them for activities allowed under state law. They are also asking to be compensated for damages, but they do not specify an amount. We will keep you posted.
You know that how they say in America, you ought to sue. You know, you can sue just about anybody for anything, but I'm curious as to why they think this suit is going to go much farther than previous suits that have asked for the same 10th Amendment right. I mean, when we look at the Raich decision under the Supreme Court and the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Collective decision, I don't know what they're thinking they're going to get that these people didn't already try to establish under the law here. Of course, I agree with them that the federal government should have nothing to do with trying to bust these caregivers or trying to regulate how medical marijuana is being used in the states. All I'm saying here is I don't know what path or what you know, trick they've got up their sleeves that's going to be any different than these other two cases. But like Carrie said, we'll keep you posted.
And this from our Deputy Director Paul Armentano. The California Assembly is considering legislation that would reduce criminal penalties for cannabis cultivation in California. The bill seeks to downgrade cultivation from a mandatory felony to an alternative misdemeanor. This would permit judges and the DAs to treat minor cultivation cases as misdemeanors at considerable cost savings to both users and law enforcement. Assembly Bill 1017 was approved by the Assembly Public Safety Committee by a 4-3 vote back on May 3rd and is now awaiting a vote by the full Assembly. The bill is endorsed by the District Attorney of Mendocino County, David Eastier, along with other North State DAs, but is opposed by California's mainstream narcotics enforcement establishment. Now, at Normal, we do support AB 1017 because it would help protect small-scale personal use and medical growers from felony punishment. You can find out how to contact your Assembly member to ask them to support AB 1017 at our website at normal.org.
So decriminalization of small personal cultivation, and you know, we saw a bill similar to this up in Maine being proposed. It didn't pass, but this is now becoming a subject for discussion. The decriminalization of cultivation, not just the personal use. Some people are finally starting to get it that in order for personal use to be okay, it has to grow from somewhere. It just doesn't appear from the weed fairy. This would make so much sense. And there's so many people out there who really, really just want to grow a plant, smoke for themselves, maybe, you know, smoke out a couple of friends, but that's it. And unfortunately, since they're not allowed to have their own little personal closet grow, they're out there supporting people that have bigger grows. They're supporting the markets out there that are maybe, you know, poisoning the land with illegal grow ops out there in the national forests. I mean, this all compounds, and all we got to do is let people grow their own personal amount. We take so much of that incentive away. AB 1017 is a good move on that point. And check out California Normal, canormal.org, for more information.
Whoosh.
Whoosh, it's not working.
And we've talked about this before, that controversial bill that would give a potential life sentence for hash manufacturing from cannabis in Oklahoma. House Bill 1798 passed the Senate on a 44-2 vote. There you go. And then in the House with a 75-18 vote. Governor Mary Fallon signed the legislation into law this week, making it illegal in Oklahoma to make hash or cook with cannabis, like a pan of Alice B. Toklas brownies. This newly formed felony can get you a $50,000 fine for a first offense, along with 2 years in prison up to life in prison. The language of the bill would make something as innocent as a grinder with a hash screen or a key fob worthy of a felony charge. The bill comes from the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, an organization that says they are committed to serve the citizens of Oklahoma in the quest for a drug-free state. In this quest, Oklahoma citizens will now face the same charge for as they would for murder, as for shaking some keef off of some marijuana buds to save for later. Since hash or keef have never killed anyone and rarely, if ever, have led to a violent crime, the law seems out of sync with the times. The bill states that it shall be unlawful for any person to manufacture or attempt to manufacture any controlled dangerous substance by cooking, burning, or extracting and converting, or attempting to extract or convert marijuana or marijuana oil into hashish, hash oil, or hashish powder. The bill goes on to make that offense a felony with a fine not to exceed $50,000 and imprisonment in the state penitentiary for not less than 2 years. A second offense will double all those fines to $100,000 and twice the imprisonment, so 4 years minimum, up to two life sentences. And on that second offense, the fines are mandatory and cannot be suspended, deferred, or offered probation. The bill, now passed by the legislature and now signed by the governor, will become effective on November 1st. So to our Oklahoma brothers and sisters, we ask you to contact your representatives and to please be safe. We need you fighting from outside of prison walls.
Yeah, here we go from talking about decriminalization of personal grows in California to the other end of the spectrum, life in prison for a grinder or a pot brownie. It's really amazing. And when you put those things together, those big long clauses like Carrie was reading out there, it says, it shall be unlawful for any person to manufacture or attempt to manufacture any controlled dangerous substance by cooking, burning, or extracting and converting, or attempting to extract and convert marijuana or marijuana oil into hash, hash oil, or hash powder. There's so many ors and ands in there, you can really get lost in the thicket. But when you diagram that sentence out, you get, it's unlawful to attempt to manufacture any controlled substance by cooking. That's part of the law now in Oklahoma. Unlawful to make a controlled substance by cooking. There's your pot brownies. There's your tinctures. There's any sort of cooked edible in the state of Oklahoma. 2 years to life, $50,000 fine. And the other way you can diagram this sentence, unlawful to attempt to extract marijuana into hashish powder. That's keef, like Kerry was saying. Keef screen, right there. You are attempting to extract marijuana into hash powder. 2 years to life. The brownies can get you as much prison time as premeditated murder. A grinder with a keef screen can get you as much sentence as a repeat child rapist. That's the way the law is in Oklahoma right now. And more reason you need to get in touch with TulsaNormal.org and OKNormal, OklahomaNormal.org, and help them out fighting for the end of marijuana prohibition in the most dangerous state to be a pot consumer.
And Connecticut is looking at medical cannabis. Members of the Joint Standing Committee on Public Health voted in favor last week of Governor's Bill 1015, which would authorize an individual to use marijuana for medical purposes as directed by a physician. Members of the judiciary had already endorsed the bill back in April, and it does have the support of Governor Dan Malloy. Lawmakers passed similar legislation back in 2007, only to have the measure vetoed by then-Governor Jody Rell. Newly elected Governor Dan Malloy has been a past supporter of medical marijuana law reform and is backing Senate Bill and Governor's Bill 1015. If enacted, Connecticut will become the 16th state since 1996 to authorize the state-sanctioned use of cannabis when recommended by a physician. If you live in Connecticut, please contact your member of the House and Senate, ask them to support this legislation. And as always, we can help you do that on our website, stash.normal.org or normal.org. All you got to bring is your zip code.
That's right. And we've got a great activist out there with Connecticut Normal, Eric Williams with campaigns1.com. That's W-O-N, like you're winning a campaign. Campaigns1.com and Connecticut Normal. Check out our website at normal.org/chapters. Click the link for state chapters. You can scroll down and find where Connecticut is. Give them your support. He's doing some great lobbying there and making this bill move forward. And we can have this pass in Connecticut and make it the 16th state. Let's do it.
And I missed this story on Monday, but I wanted to highlight it a little bit. Russ talked about the marches that happened this last weekend in the States and the amazing 25,000 Canadians that took to the streets to demand their government legalize cannabis. It's called a global march, and marches took place all over the world. And right on the front lines, the countries that has paid a very large price for the war on drugs, citizens of Mexico took to the streets by the thousands on last Saturday, chanting and cheering and asking for their government to help end the violence that has led to over 40,000 dead in Mexico since President Felipe Calderon launched a paramilitary-style crackdown back in December of 2006. Leopoldo Rivera, the president of the Mexican Association for Cannabis Studies, spoke at the square in Mexico City on Saturday to hundreds that turned out there. He said that it was prudent to be informed on cannabis and that people who consume cannabis are not necessarily criminals or ill. Cannabis consumers in Mexico, he said, can be any regular person who is a productive, contributing member of society. He then told the crowd that they are lobbying for the decriminalization of marijuana as a way to reach peace in the bloody battle in Mexico. Participants marched from the city's Zocalo to the Revolution Monument. And also in Buenos Aires, Argentina, thousands turned out in the street as well at the presidential Pink House to demand outright legalization of cannabis as well as a national free plan to combat addiction. There were 23 different events just in Argentina on Saturday in major cities. Argentine Congressman Claudio Lanza talked to supporters in Cordoba, telling them that democracy has to do with a society in which each individual solves or decides their own story, saying, quote, "The use of marijuana can have a recreational or addictive nature, but either one of them doesn't deserve punishment." Overall, we have reports that 40 different countries participated in this year's global march.
Wow, that's amazing. We heard from South Africa yesterday, and I showed you on Monday the pictures for Toronto. And you see in these countries, I also saw, I think it was Brazil sent some pictures in where they had 15,000 people marching in the streets. And I want to see those kind of numbers in America. Why do we not have, you know, tens of thousands of people turning out in the streets in America demanding an end to this marijuana prohibition? Maybe it's not affecting us as directly. Maybe enough people don't realize what's going on. Maybe it's not so so obvious as it is in Mexico, where they go out day after day and they see bodies in the streets and people hung from the overpasses and the heads of police chiefs delivered to the mayor's office. I mean, maybe that's what it takes to get people motivated in America to maybe turn off American Idol and show up on at a march or something like that. What more has to be done? What more has to be explained for people to want to stand up for their rights and end this stupid prohibition on marijuana? We're here every day explaining what it's doing to this country. I hope you're out there telling your friends and neighbors how important this is. Let's get more people out to these marches. Let's show people that in America we really do want an end to this prohibition.
What do you think about a break, Russ?
Yeah, definitely. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send to South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the battle, the war on drugs has been a utter failure.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure,
And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
Normal Show Live, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
This is Peter Tosh for Normal, a national organization for the reform of marijuana laws. Did you know that more than 400,000 Americans were arrested last year for the possession of marijuana? People are being sentenced to up to 40 years for even standing beside a joint. Well, I think it is definitely time for you to help doing something towards this. To find out what you can do, just write Normal. N-O-R-M-L.
1600 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2006. That's 1600 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2006.
Help Normal to help protect your rights.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Grateful Dread Public Radio, Summit, New Jersey's progressive peace station at gdreadradio.net. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. All right, folks. As you know, this last weekend I was in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world, checking out the fun on 6th Street, all sorts of great bands. And Texas Normal had a fundraiser that took place on that March Day, Saturday, the May 7th, and a great band played there that I want to give you a look at. They're called Sun Salutation, and they're fairly well known in the Austin area. It was the first time I'd heard of them. And they call themselves kind of an alternative reggae sort of band. And like I was tweeting out about it. It was like listening to a reggae band, you know, mixed with metal, you know, because they had a lot of hard, you know, guitars going. And I thought it was just a really cool mix. Loved their sound. And I thought we would give them a play here on Normal Show Live. They played out there at the Momo's Club, and they were a good time. I'll see if I can get a photo here for you, give you a look at them. Here we go. There we are. That is Sun Salutation live at Momo's this Saturday. We're going to play some music from them. I'm not sure which song we've got from them, though.
One by One.
One by One. This is Sun Salutation from Austin, Texas, for your IRE Wednesday.
Chance, you know me, you know me, see how we roll. You never, never, never know. The life would take its toll. Drop the message and they'll never know that one side confuses all the mind. Strapped up, give it away. Doped up, what did you see? Cause in my mind I had the time to understand the copacetic misinterpretation of a master plan. You think you're free? Drop it off. Clowns, and all I had hoped for was one more place to see. You know I don't mean to be negative, it's just me. Another time, another place. Cause when I'm standing, I'm in my own space. And fly with me, cause we never come down.
Copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
This is Normal Show Live.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club...
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Hey, great news coming out of Normal's national office here. Get exclusive Normal collectible items available for a limited time only. Normal will be offering memorabilia T-shirts from the 40th Annual National Conference for this week only. This week only. There's a limited supply, and the stock is running out fast, especially if you're looking for an XL T-shirt. I can tell you there's less than 10 of them right now. Buy yours today and get your own piece of Normal history. T-shirts are going for $50 a shirt or two for $75. For $100, you can get your T-shirt signed by Normal founder Keith Stropp. So get them now. Normal National Conference 40th Annual Collector's Item T-shirts available now from normal.org. Go to our website, normal.org. We'll have the links up there if you'd like to make your purchase. Thanks for contributing to Normal. We'll be right back.
Yo, what's good? This is B-Real of Cypress Hill chilling on Normal Show Live. Legalize it.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, we reached the middle of the week one more time, and we're talking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany. Dr. Mitch, how you doing?
Having a great day.
All right. Well, let's get this thing started because we have so many questions that people want to ask you, and I'm going to start by addressing a study that Paul Armentano had forwarded to me, and I think you got an email as well, but it's kind of apropos of all of this Colorado DUID and people worrying about nanograms per milliliter, this new study that says that frequent users may have different rates of elimination. Can you tell us more about it?
The clincher here is it just points out that increased exposure to the drug alters the way you metabolize in a way that would suggest that trying to compare across two different people in nanograms per milliliter or anything like that is essentially unfair because it could be completely unrelated to how they would actually drive. I've been perseverating on this for years now, but really if we don't have a roadside sobriety test that actually measures some kind of ability to handle motor skills, these kinds of alternative approaches getting inside people's blood or their urine or their spit or anything else just isn't going to covary with how well they can actually drive. And I'd love to see data like this hit the news.
You know, and this Colorado 5 nanograms per milliliter limit was debated a whole bunch there, and it culminated in the Westwards critic, their pot critic, William Breathes, going on a fast, so to speak. He didn't use cannabis for, I think it was 16 hours, maybe it was longer, but at least 16 hours, and then the next morning tested at 13 nanograms per milliliter. Do we have a lot of evidence of that? Is there more data regarding these chronic smokers testing at high levels like that after a long period of not using?
As it turns out, some of the data from Fulton's lab over a decade ago suggests that people who can dry out for even 3 days could still be over 5 nanograms per milliliter. So, again, we just realized that this really has nothing to do with impairment and everything to do with just essentially trying to penalize people for using the plant.
And how much about the ability of frequent users to, say, compensate or become accustomed to the effects? Is there any data or truth to that?
We've seen some evidence with the THC pills, Marinol, and things like that, that experienced users do seem to have a higher tolerance in general to a lot of subjective effects and potentially some psychomotor effects. And the clincher is there's so many other things that contribute to your ability to drive, so it sounds absurd, but if they happen to have been taking a stimulant at the same time, they would metabolize more quickly, end up with a lower number of nanograms per milliliter, and yet might be even more impaired from driving. Conversely, somebody who hasn't smoked any cannabis but took a couple of Benadryl could be completely impaired and have no nanograms of THC metabolites. So just, it seems a real ass-backward approach to this problem. And nevertheless, I don't want people driving impaired. And I feel like if you can, you know, do the standard roadside sobriety test that we've seen work so well for alcohol, by all means, you ought to be able to drive.
Yeah, and I will testify, you know, my wife's a patient, and I'll tell you that one Benadryl messes her up worse than any cannabis ever would. I could. Funny you mentioned the Benadryl. And this leads to our first question coming from the chat room from Chief Mojo Rising, a great Doors-oriented name. Love that. It goes along with what you said about sobriety tests. What kind of sobriety tests will they implement when they pull someone over for driving under the influence of drugs?
The ones that seem to be most sensitive to cannabis are slight adaptations to the ones that we've had for alcohol. So walking a straight line and taking a specific number of steps, turning, and then walking the straight line a specific number of steps back. As it turns out, cannabis users are actually excellent at staying on the line, but do a retarded job at keeping the number of steps to the number that the cop actually assigned, which is sort of consistent with our short-term memory stuff. And then holding your head still and following the cop's finger with your eyes. The saccades are impaired in a number of different people with a number of different problems, but often heavy cannabis intoxication can be revealed that way. And I hate to say it, but people who are high are very bad at keeping their head still during that task.
Oh.
So you can see simple adaptations of these kinds of things are great. The other thing is, as odd as it sounds, is having folks mimic some of the driving type tasks. So if I said, I'm going to count aloud and I just want you to say stop when I reach the first prime number, all right? Well, that's certainly going to get somebody to at least try to be thinking in a certain way. That standard hold your hands out and touch your nose can often be very revealing for both alcohol, the antihistamines, and cannabis. And in a sense, these are much more important correlates of actually being able to drive than any of these psychophysiological measures.
Yeah, I had to giggle to myself as a nerd thinking of having to stop for the first prime number. I guess it depends on where you start.
Exactly.
You start around 5,000. I don't know if I could follow. All right, let's get to some of these questions here. Randy from the chat room wanted to know. Apparently there's this product called Tessalon Pearls, or something that's chemically known as benzonatate, for long-term therapy for coughing. And he wants to know how you feel about using that for coughing for daily cannabis smokers. He says he's been using them for 3 months, and they work great to help reduce the cough. Benzonatate, I think it is.
If it's the substance I'm thinking of, I'm afraid it's one of those issues where you're treating the symptom but perhaps not the cause. So this is something that actually decreases the coughing reaction, so to speak, when in fact it might be more appropriate to keep it going so you can cough out potentially irritating things in your lungs. So obviously my first pick would be to ask to switch to vaporizer, definitely stay away from cigarettes and things like that, and then rather than this kind of cough suppression approach, decreasing the presence of the irritants that are leading to the cough in the first place.
Okay. Let's get another question from our chat room. Stereotype wants to know, can you vaporize other drugs like crack or meth? And if you did, would it be safer?
As it turns out, at least tobacco, probably the stimulants, would not essentially vaporize at a low enough temperature. You have to get them hotter to the point where they're close to ignition in order to get the psychoactive effects, and I'm just so down on those drugs. Their negative consequences are just so nasty that to say, would vaporizing decrease the problems? I mean, the problem is with their subjective effects, not necessarily with any of the other aspects of it. And with tobacco, again, we're sort of in a weird situation where it's a stimulant that increases heart rate and can cause problems in that way, has some carcinogens, but in truth, chewing tobacco seems to have fewer negative consequences than smoking it, and vaporizing it just doesn't seem to work.
Okay, we have a listener from Florida who wants to know if you know of any studies about treating seizures with ganja, and could seizures be a reason to get medical marijuana in Florida?
There are some pretty compelling studies on cannabidiol, of all things, and seizures, and some heartfelt and moving and suggestive case examples, including our beloved Valerie Corral from WAM, to suggest that cannabis can really help seizures a lot. And so I think that although we haven't done the randomized clinical trial that we wish we could do, there's certainly enough evidence there to make a compelling case.
Okay. Stone Kidney has a great question here. What kind of stuff am I smoking when I smoke unflushed weed? How bad is it, or can it be, for my health?
As it turns out, if it's got remnants of some of the fertilizers, even some of the less harmful, more popular ones in it, it can still be problematic in the long term. So you may not notice any outrageous subjective effects or a deviant smell or anything, but months and months of exposure, it can essentially increase respiratory irritation and some of the symptoms that are associated with it. I unfortunately just want to advocate to folks to make sure their cannabis is as pure and natural and green as possible.
Yeah, let's make that possible by legalizing it. Also, would unflushed weed be more likely to give you a bad hacking cough?
It's distinctly possible because of those irritants, especially the ammonia-based type fertilizers. I mean, I know everybody claims they don't use those, but that's a real opener of the respiratory system, and in fact, that's how some of the cigarettes at one time used to, instead of jacking up their nicotine and having to report a higher level of nicotine, they would just add these ammonia compounds that would open up the capillaries really big anyway, so what nicotine was there would have a bigger impact, and then pretend like they hadn't basically hijacked the whole cigarette.
Wow. I also want to remind folks, we're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and if you don't get a chance to get your question on live, you can always send an email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Or you can call in next week, because we'll be here every week with Dr. Mitch. Let's go back to the questions from the chat. This asks about, in a continuing effort to find a test to clearly diagnose fibromyalgia, studies have shown fibromyalgia patients to have less gray matter in their brains and lower dopamine levels that may be correlated to this. At least this is what he heard, and wants to know if you can discuss the truth or the fallacy of that statement and how cannabis affects the dopamine levels in the brain.
Wow, this is a complicated one, but I think today is National Fibromyalgia Day, so
go.
it's definitely an apt question. The clincher here is the diagnosis at one time was based on having pain in multiple spots and a certain other set of symptoms, and unfortunately comorbid depression and a few other pain-type issues could confound it and make it more difficult to have the diagnosis. Then when we're comparing people who have this disorder to people who do not, because the groups are, in a sense, kind of mixed up, because some of the folks who have been diagnosed with fibromyalgia don't really have it, it kind of weakened what those differences should really look like. The dopamine system is clearly involved, but I want to emphasize that the dopamine system is clearly involved in damn near everything now. Mm-hmm. And cannabis's impact on dopamine is very much downstream. It stimulates the cannabinoid receptors, which, literally multiple steps later will increase dopamine release, but nothing like our standard dopaminergic drugs like amphetamine or cocaine or anything like that. That said, the pain associated with fibromyalgia does seem to respond to cannabis in a number of case studies, in part because that pain is mediated by, it looks like, the cannabinoid system, like a whole lot of other pains, and particularly that kind of blunt pressure type pain seems to respond well to a moderate dose of cannabis. And so it does seem like there's a big medical potential there, but it may not necessarily be through dopaminergic action.
All right. Great questions, by the way, folks. I think we got time for a couple more real quick ones here. Maybe it's rhetorical, but I like this question. I have neuropathic back pain that I take opiates for. What are the chances my neurologist recommends marijuana without me mentioning it?
I'm sorry, you phased out there for me. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, sorry. It was just someone saying that he takes these opiates for his back pain and wants to know what are the chances his neurologist would recommend marijuana without him mentioning it. And I think probably close to zero. I don't know. It depends on your state.
I believe if there were a number lower than zero for a probability, that would even be the number to pick.
Yeah, yes. Possible. Okay, Katie Spa has a quick one here. Does smoking marijuana cause blood sugar to go up?
Despite our big hypothesizing about how the munchies develop, we don't see consistent changes in blood sugar across everybody, but there's actually some evidence that blood sugar may go down a little bit in response to marijuana, and people have decided that maybe that was the source of the munchies. But I think it's a rather indirect effect and not one that would fully explain the appetite enhancement of cannabis.
All right, last question here. Does long-term exposure to smoked cannabis change your cannabinoid receptor chemistry forever?
Well, that's interesting. There's definitely some downregulation of the cannabinoid receptors and some increased sensitivity in some other folks with repeated exposure over long term, and we do see this in animal literature, but to make it sound like crack cocaine or something like that is a little dramatic. These changes might be what's behind the modest forms of craving we see in daily users who stop, but it's not anywhere near the kind of alteration in neural function we see with the dangerous drugs.
All right. Well, there we have it, our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We do it every Wednesday. Come back and join us next week. And Dr. Mitch, thanks so much for this service you do for all the cannabis community.
Oh, thank you, Russ.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have it going, kids? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Oh, lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Just lie, don't hide it. Buy it up right now.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do whatever.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant. Oh, boy. The Reefer Madness is out today. The Denver Post editorial board
is raising the reefer madness of the stone drivers. Oh, beware the stone drivers out there. As any minute now, we're all in trouble. We've got to watch out for them. Oh, gee. They just had this second defeat of this bill to set this 5 nanogram per milliliter THC in the blood limit. All of our Foley artists are late today, John. I don't know what the hell's up with our sound effects team.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
That's really weird. Let's try that again here. There it is.
Yeah, it wasn't 25 seconds late that time.
Yeah, that's not so bad. All right. Anyway, this per se DUID bill, this 5 nanogram per se DUID bill, has died a second time. It seems like it's dead for good here. So the Denver Post has taken to resurrecting the ghost of William Randolph Hearst here to try to scare everybody, because now they got this editorial out, and its title is literally "A License to Drive Stoned." Oh, no. All right, so first of all, they write their lead line, right? And then the very next line is, "What were they smoking?" Right? Because you got to have a pot pun in there, right? And "what were they smoking" is referring to the liberal Democrats, quote, under the Post here, quote, "liberal Democrats and libertarian-leaning Republicans," end quote, "who killed the bill." And you can always tell that William Randolph Hearst is writing when he opens with a pot pun. Because, after all, according to William Randolph Hearst, smoking pot completely changes your sense of morality and reason, and only wacky tobacco could make a liberal or a libertarian vote for liberty. Okay. Next, the Post goes on to castigate the lawmakers for buying the hype, their words, about, quote, "relative highness," again, their words. This idea that human beings of varying sizes and differing use rates of cannabis might not all be impaired at 5 nanograms per milliliter. You know, part of that hype that they're talking about was the Westward's pot critic William Breeze abstaining from marijuana use for a day and then testing at 13 nanograms per milliliter the next morning. The Post thinks it's ludicrous that some people think that they can use their cannabis medication and not be impaired. Well, I wonder if the Denver Post has ever taken a look at a bottle of Vicodin, because I have, and here is the actual label on a bottle of Vicodin, hydrocodone, right? And as I look down here on the "what should I avoid," it says, "Do not drive, operate heavy machinery, or participate in any other possibly dangerous activities until you know how you react to this medication. Oxycodone can make you sleepy." Until you know. Do not drive until you know how you may react to this. And furthermore, I get down here on the bottle where you can see the stickers. This one sticker says, "May cause drowsiness. Alcohol may intensify this effect. Use care when operating a car or dangerous machinery." Another sticker a little farther: "This drug may impair the ability to drive or operate heavy machinery. Use care until you become familiar with the effects." So apparently, when it comes to oxycodone, Vicodin, a very addictive and toxic and very impairing substance that people can take, when that's your medication, so long as you know how it affects you, so long as you understand the effects, so long as you take care, we're fine with you driving. In fact, nobody even bothers to test the nanograms per milliliter of oxycodone or hydrocodone in your system if they're suspecting you of DUID there. Right? There's no per se limit on that. They may test your blood to see if you had hydrocodone in it, but they don't say, "Well, if you got 5 nanograms per milliliter, you were obviously impaired." No, the labels right there say, "Until you know how you may be affected, take care or do not operate heavy machinery. Do not drive." But hell, once you know what's going on, once you've figured out how it works, go ahead and drive. It's your medicine, right? Now, to drive this point home, to drive this point home, get it, right? I'm not above using pot puns myself, right? To drive this point home, the Post cites some statistics on driving fatalities since the passage of medical marijuana in the year 2000. This is from the Denver Post now. Quote, "Incidents of drug driving fatalities have been increasing, according to the Colorado Department of Transportation." Now, while driving fatalities overall are going down... wait, stop. Fatalities overall are going down since 2000. So if I'm a Colorado driver, my overall chances of being killed on the roadways have decreased since medical marijuana began. These are the dangerous roads you need a 5 nanogram per milliliter solution for? Look, I went and even looked it up because, you know, I'm kind of that way. The Colorado Department of Transportation, in their latest report in 2010 that I was able to look up online, said, quote, the number of people killed in motor vehicle crashes in Colorado in 2009 may have reached the lowest level in 3 decades. And, quote, Colorado has experienced a steady decline in motor vehicle fatalities since a recent peak of 243 deaths in 2002, despite an increase of nearly 4.2 billion vehicle miles traveled in 2008 compared to 2002, end quote. 4 billion miles more driven, and we're down to the lowest levels recorded of highway fatalities in 30 years. So let's just make sure we're clear on that. All right. Go on, Denver Post. What else do you got here? The number of those fatalities involving drivers who tested positive for marijuana use is going up. In 2005, 23 drivers involved in fatal crashes had used marijuana. In 2009, that number was 37. With the recent boom in medical marijuana cards floating around in Colorado, about 125,000 have them now. Does that really come as a surprise? Okay, now, if you don't think too hard, that excerpt might scare you. But first of all, let's just start with the numbers they're giving us, right? 23 drivers in 2005, 37 drivers in 2009, 37 fatal marijuana drivers out of 125,000 medical marijuana patients. That 37 divided by 125,000, just off the top of my head, that's like that much. That's a tiny, tiny, tiny statistic that you're even worried about, that we need to have this great fear of the stone drivers. But still, maybe you look at that and go, well, rest now. Come on, hold on. 23 drivers died in 05, 37 died in 09. That's quite an increase when you look at it percentage-wise, 23 to 37, man. That's quite an increase. That's, you know, a 50% increase, right? But let's start with an analogy. Let's see if I can show you how this doesn't really work. Let's say we could look up fatal crashes in 2009 that involved drivers who had used iPads, Facebook, or Barack Obama coffee mugs. And then we compared that to a figure of all the users of those products in 2005. Do you think we'd see an increase in drivers who fatal crashes who had used Barack Obama coffee mugs or iPads or Facebook? Right. I know it has nothing to do with whether they would be impaired, because that's the point. That's what we're talking about. We would have more of those people wrecking because there's more of those people now. The Post is suffering from the fallacy of correlation equals causation. When they say drivers involved in fatal crashes had used marijuana, we're talking about a post-accident toxicology screen that either detects inactive marijuana metabolites in the urine or active THC in the blood. In the urine case, we're talking about pot use within weeks or months, and in the blood case, we're even talking about use within days or weeks. It tells us nothing about whether or not they were impaired at the time of the accident. It only tells us that they were a marijuana user. So, with 125,000 medical marijuana users, no, I'm not surprised that we find more marijuana users killed in car wrecks, any more than if 125,000 Rwandan refugees moved into Denver and suddenly we had more Rwandans in car wrecks. There's just more of us out there. Has nothing to do with whether or not there are fatalities on the road. And in fact, when we see we're at the lowest levels in 30 years, maybe you could make the correlation equals causation argument to say, medical marijuana has made the roads safer. It makes as much logical sense. I'm not trying to posit that. But if you want to say correlation equals causation, how is it that since we've passed medical marijuana, we have the lowest rates recorded? Okay, statistics is a slippery little game, but the facts are this. Medical marijuana users are not any threat on the roadways, period. These people have been using cannabis on a regular basis, just like people who use OxyContin on a regular basis. And just as we give them the responsibility of understanding how much of that medicine they can consume, the OxyContin, and still be safe to drive on the roads, just as we trust them with the responsibility of evaluating their own impairment on OxyContin, we should give that same consideration to medical marijuana patients. We all know the old jokes about marijuana drivers, that they sit at the stoplight waiting for it to, or stop sign waiting for it to turn green, and that they're driving so slow. Nobody out there is really afraid of the stone drivers. It is time to end these shenanigans and judge impairment by impairment, like Dr. Mitch always says. Touch the tip of your nose, recite numbers. There are tests for these things to determine whether someone's impaired on Benadryl, Oxycontin, marijuana, alcohol, too tired, emotionally distracted, whatever. Let's let the science decide this stuff.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. We got another hour here at Toker Talk Radio if you want to hang out with me and Ganja John. For those of you on the podcast, thanks for listening. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
You're growing, you're trying to roll it, you're smoking, and it goes down super.